Welcome back. As we find ourselves now less than a week to go before Rosh Hashanah, and of course, hopefully very much gearing up for this special day. We've had the opportunity over the past several weeks to discuss different topics related to Rosh Hashanah. Now I'd like to focus this evening on a topic which is so central to the day of Rosh Hashanah. In fact, we call Rosh Hashanah Rosh Hashanah. That's the typical name that we use. The Torah has other names to describe Rosh Hashanah, including Yom Teruah. The day of Rosh Hashanah is called the Yom Teruah, the day in which we hear the sound, the Teruah sound, which we're going to talk about tonight, namely the sound of the shofar. And so what I'd like to do tonight is talk about the mitzvah of shofar from many different angles. In less than an hour, I'm going to share with you, if I remember correctly, 12 different perspectives. We are not necessarily going to divide the time evenly. I'd like to spend time on the first two, but I would say themes and different ideas and messages that are sort of embedded within the mitzvah of shofar, and hopefully this will help us prepare for this very special day. The mitzvah of shofar is one which I think we all would agree captures our attention in a very powerful way. On the one hand, one could argue, well, like any mitzvah that only comes around once a year, there's a certain mystique, there's a certain excitement to that mitzvah. And I certainly wouldn't want to compare it to another mitzvah and say, well, but if you think about it, you know, whether, you know, we'll talk about the mitzvah of matzah, let's say, whether you like matzah, you don't like matzah, it doesn't really make a difference. The mitzvah of matzah, you know, in essence, is a mitzvah d'oraisa, and as far as we know, has sort of the same value, objectively speaking, as any other mitzvah, such as the mitzvah shofar. But there's something about the mitzvah shofar, both in terms of our anticipation of being able to fulfill the mitzvah and the experience that we have individually and collectively as we are fulfilling this mitzvah, which seems somewhat transcendent. Now, it could be that's just sort of a kasha on us, that we should really relate to every mitzvah in such a way. That is true. There are stories that are told and perhaps images that we can recall in our own memory of individuals who cried when hearing the sound of the shofar. Perhaps we cry when we hear the sound of the shofar. And I think we would agree that while there are certain people who by nature cry and maybe a little more emotional, there's something about the shofar which sort of elicits a response in a way that just seems to be more natural and in some ways, you know, much more powerful than other mitzvahs. So what I'd like to do, hopefully tonight, even though not really address this directly, but sort of, you know, fundamentally explore the mitzvah in a way which will sort of perhaps explain what we ourselves can't always explain, sort of put in words, what is it about this mitzvah that is so powerful? So I'd like to begin sort of the first approach to discussing this mitzvah tonight by pointing out a famous, well, it's famous if you know it, otherwise it's not, don't feel bad if you never heard this before, but somewhat of a famous stira in the Rambam. We know that the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah records many different halachos and, you know, many thousands, and generally we would expect and assume and really insist that the Rambam would be consistent in terms of his logic, his thinking, and in terms of the practical applications of the dinim. More often than not, I mean, every once in a while, but not just here and there, there are situations in which there's what appears to be a contradiction. We raise this question, and then we try to resolve it. So one of the famous contradictions, which we find in the Rambam, is we find that the Rambam in Hilchos Shofar, in Perek Beis Halacha Daled, teaches that if a person blows the shofar on Rosh Hashanah for a purpose other than fulfilling the mitzvahs. The Rambam over here talks about two examples. Number one, a person who's involved in the mitzvah in order to teach somebody else, or somebody who was listening to somebody who was blowing the shofar for that purpose. So says the Rambam very clearly, very definitively, lo yatzah. A person cannot fulfill the mitzvah shofar if they are blowing the shofar for any other reason other than to fulfill the mitzvah. But yet the Rambam himself, in Hilchos Chametz Matzah, going back to the comparison we mentioned earlier, writes that if a person is forced, is coerced to eat matzah, again, not that I don't want to eat it, your mother says eat it, but the halacha described over here in the Rambam describes a little more of a sort of a violent coercion where somebody is actually forced, physically forced to eat matzah. So now the Rambam says, lo yatzi yidei chavasa. Now, if we have to take a step back for a moment and consider what is sort of the underlying principle that is at play here. I'm sorry, thank you. Yatzi yidei chavasa. Thank you very much. Such a person does satisfy his obligation. So what's going on over here? So we would assume, and many of the Farshim who discuss this Rambam do assume, that really what's going on over here, it's a question which is sort of more of a general question when it comes to mitzvahs, whether mitzvahs tzrichos kavanah. When a person performs a mitzvah, does that mitzvah require special intent? And when we say kavanah, we're not talking here about having very lofty thoughts that a person goes to the mitzvah beforehand that says anything mulchud mezumah. No, no, we just mean very, very simple kavanah to be yotzei the mitzvah. Is that required? So if we didn't know anything about the Rambam's opinion on this question, we would come to the Rambam Hilchos Shofar and we would say, well, it seems from here that the Rambam insists that kavanah is necessary, and that's why if a person is blowing the shofar for any reason other than to fulfill the mitzvah, he does not satisfy his obligation. Whereas the Rambam Hilchos Chametz Matzah seems to be saying that kavanah is not necessary, because when it comes to achilas matzah, even if a person is forced to eat it, physically forced to eat the matzah, he does satisfy his obligation. So this is the first question. I want you to keep that question in mind. There are many answers to this question, but tonight, just because I have a lot that I want to get into, which I'm just going to really focus on one answer. Another very interesting feature when it comes to the mitzvah of shofar is the source of the shofar. We know that it is our custom to use a shofar that comes from a ram. However, the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah basically teaches that all shofros, that horns from all animals can be used. However, there's one exception, and that's when it comes to a parah. So you see over there, there's a picture of a cow's horn on the top, and on the bottom there's a ram horn, which actually looks familiar, not the ram, but the horn, that is sort of looks almost like a shofar, because that is sort of basically the shofar that we use on Rosh Hashanah comes from a ram. Now, what exactly is the reason for this? So it's part of a lengthy discussion in the Gemara, and there's really a lot to be said on this, but I'd like to focus on one fascinating conversation, which is found in Maseches Rosh Hashanah Daf Chavav. And basically what the Gemara says is the reason as to why we cannot use a cow's horn on Rosh Hashanah is based on, or similar in concept to, another din. And Amar Ula says, Haynu Tami D'Rabbanan K'Drav Chizda. The Amar of Chizda Mipnei Ma Ein Kohen Gadol Nichnas B'Bigdei Zahav Lifnai V'Lifnim La'Avoda Avoda. Rav Chizda says, why is it that the Kohen Gadol, who normally wears golden clothing, special golden vestments, does not wear those clothing when he goes inside of the Kodesh Kedashim on Yom Kippur? Why does he change his clothing on that day at that particular time? Lifi she'ein kateger nasa seneger, famous expression which is found in the Gemara, because the Kohen Gadol is entering the Kodesh Kedashim with the hope and expectation of basically finding and facilitating favor in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And over here, if he's going to walk in with golden clothing, so that will be reminiscent of the Cheta Egel, and we don't want the Sanegar to become essentially a Kategor, which means the one who is looking to defend Klal Yisrael, we don't want him to actually come and be sort of a liability for them. So says the Gemara Velo, is that true that we are so concerned that we don't want to have anything to do with something which perhaps could be reminiscent of the Egel Azav, V'yika Dam Par? Says the Gemara, one of the things that we do on Yom Kippur, part of the Avodah, is we take a cow and we shecht it and we take its blood, and the blood is used as part of the Avodah. So why do we do that? After all, in Kategor Nasa Sinegar, says the Gemara, no, hold the Ishtani Ishtani. That's different because it undergoes some sort of change. When you look at the blood, blood is blood. It doesn't look like cow's blood. Says the Gemara, wait a second. Ivohaika Aron Vekapores. Inside of the Kodesh Kedashim, we already have kelim that are made of gold. So what is the objection of having the Kohen Gadol walk inside the Kodesh Kedashim with golden clothing? After all, there's already gold there anyway. And says the Gemara, well, choti ba yakriv kamrinan. The concern is that the one, in this case the Kohen Gadol sort of being called the chote, representing all of Klal Yisrael, the sinner, should not walk into the Kodesh Kedashim with gold. V'yik kaf u'machta, but that's not completely true either, because he's bringing in the pan and the spoons and other things that are used for this service with using the Ketores, which is also made of gold. So says the Gemara, well, choti ba yisna kamina. The concern is that he shouldn't adorn himself. He shouldn't dress and he shouldn't come in looking in beautiful gold clothing. Again, that is a problem because of ein kategor nasa seneger. Says the Gemara, v'yika bigdei zahav mi bachutz. Says the Gemara, wait a second. The Kohen Gadol wears golden clothing outside of the Kodesh Kedashim. So why are we not concerned about in kategor nasa seneger? Says the Gemara, no, because it's only a problem inside. Well, if it's only a problem inside, says the Gemara, then what's the problem with shofar? Why can't we use a cow's horn? After all, who cares that it's a cow's horn? We don't blow the shofar inside the Kodesh Kedashim. And here's the punchline, and this was all a build-up for this line. It says the Gemara, Kevan de lizikaron hu kibifnim dami. The Gemara has an expression which is really, even on a certain level, difficult to translate. I'll attempt to do so. Kevan, since the shofar is lizikaron, since it is there in order to bring about some sort of a reminder that it is there to elicit some special connection between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kibifnim dami. When we blow the shofar, it is if we are bifnim. That's a very powerful concept. The Gemara basically says that this is the basis, according to one opinion, as to why we don't use a cow's horn, because of Ein Kategor Nasa Senegar, even though we're not inside the Kodesh Kodashim, but when we blow the shofar, it's as if we're inside the Kodesh Kodashim. You're going to have to take my word for this. I'm not a bucky in all the shas, but I can assure you that when it comes to the mitzvah of sukkah, and when it comes to the mitzvah of matzah, and even when it comes to the mitzvah of tefillin, you're not going to find an expression, cave on it, whatever, lizikarinu, or anything else. It's kibifnim dami. It's only when it comes to the mitzvah of shofar, and perhaps, as we'll see in a moment, perhaps another mitzvah we can apply a similar concept. Another question, you'll see I'm leading you in a certain direction over here. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah says, what should be the shape of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Says the Gemara, Rosh Hashanah, kama dechayev inish daite tfei mali. Well, excuse me, the Mishnah says that on Rosh Hashanah the shofar should be bent. And the Gemara is explaining, why should it be kafuf, why should it be bent? Because kama dechayev inish daite tfei mali. Because the more that a person could literally sort of bend his das, we'll explain what that means in a moment, that is better. That is considered to be advantageous. What does that mean? Says Rashi, Kamadchaif inish bitfilaso. Panov kvushin la'aretz. If a person's literally and figuratively as well, if his face, if his perspective is down towards the ground, adif, this is better. Mishum be hayu ein I believe yishum. Hilkach barash Hashanah de latfilo lahaskar akedis Yitzchak ba. But in kfufin, the yovlo shein likro duror be in pshutin. Rashi says that when we are blowing a shofar for another reason, such as yovel, which we're not talking about right now, we don't care. The shofar can be straight. After all things equal, that's actually nice when you see a nice long shofar. On Rosh Hashanah, the reason why we have a bent shofar is because it sort of symbolizes the expression, the position, the posture, the entire orientation that a person should bring when he comes to shul. A person who's davening, and there's a picture there, I hope the picture is helpful. You see, a person who's not standing, is not sitting, is not slouching, but he's bent over. So what's going on over here? Again, the Rambam seems to imply, well, there seems to be a contradiction as to whether or not it's Tzrichas Kavana. We saw that the Gemara says that when a person blows shofar, it's kibifnim dami. Over here, there seems to be some odd connection between the mitzvah shofar and the way a person is supposed to stand or be sort of his position when davening, which also seems very strange. We don't apply this by other mitzvahs. Can you imagine if we did it by lulav? We would say, well, since a person should be bent when he's davening, so therefore your lulav should be bent. If your lulav is bent too much, we say it's no good. So as long as it comes to the mitzvah shofar, we say, yeah, we're going to bend the shofar because that sort of captures the orientation of a person who's davening. So there's a beautiful, beautiful explanation which is found in the Sefer Yemei Zikaron, which is, I have over here just a little excerpt from the Rav Soloveitchik. And the Rav Zatzal said the following, and I have several paragraphs over here in Hebrew, but time doesn't allow, and I don't think it would be productive for me to read the entire thing inside in Hebrew. First of all, these slides are always available online, so if you want to study them more carefully inside, you may. But I'll basically tell you what the Rav says over here. I'm going to look and try to extract the main ideas. Basically says the Rav the following, that we have been blessed as human beings. Perhaps the greatest gift that God has given us is the ability to speak. And we use our words in order to craft some thoughts, sometimes some very, very profound and sophisticated thoughts. And we use our words in order to communicate not only one with another, but with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he says, Rosh Hashanah is perhaps the best example because we have such rich tefillos on Rosh Hashanah, including the lengthiest Amidah, the Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, which includes not just beautiful paragraphs and introductions, but psukim from all over the Nevi'im. And he says this really sort of captures the special endowment that God has given to man by making man a Ruach Mamalala, by Yipach Biapav Nishav Eschayim. Man has the ability to speak and to use his intelligence and our words, our vocabulary, to be able to express ourselves even in very, very deep and personal and intimate ways. However, he says that when a person is davening, that's not the only mechanism that we can and we should use to daven. He says, how do Bali Chayim daven? Animals. He says, well, animals don't daven. So the Rav says they absolutely do. All creatures on earth, they daven. They don't necessarily take out a sitter, and they don't say Birchus Kriyas Shema, and they don't say Shema, and they don't stand in Shema, so they take three steps back. True. However, all animals daven. They daven by virtue of the fact that they make noises, and through these noises, they are expressing, as David HaMelech says in many cases, their shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to a certain extent, if you see an animal in pain, and an animal groans and makes a noise, makes some sort of grunt or scream. So this is the animal's expressing itself, again, not necessarily in an intellectually sophisticated way, but the animal is expressing itself. Says the Rav, when we come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the day of Rosh Hashanah, we don't rely exclusively on the Koach HaDibur. We don't rely only on our ability to fashion beautiful tefillos using words, but we remind ourselves that on this day that we are feeling a tremendous, all the burden, a tremendous amount of pressure and inspiration, fear and excitement, anticipation, love, so many different intense emotions. So this comes to a certain point where there simply are no words. We can't rely on words. And so therefore he says, it's so powerful the way he expresses over here, the Seder HaBrachos and the Shmon Esrei is such that we have long, lengthy brachos. And we say, and then we bring rayas from the Nevi'im, from the Ksuvim, from the Torah all over, and then we wrap it up, and we have a... But then what do we do at the end? At the end, we sort of surrender from that attempt to express ourselves relying exclusively on words. And what we end up doing is we blow the shofar. And the shofar, explained the Rav, is essentially the wordless prayer. The shofar is the way in which we express ourselves when there are no words to express. And with this, the Rav basically explained, really, the Rambam holds mitzvos ein tzrichos kavanah. That's why if somebody forces you to eat matzah, you get the mitzvah. However, we cannot apply that to shofar. Shofar requires kavanah. And you know why? Because shofar is really, essentially, one of the same, it's of another mitzvah, and that is tefillah. Is anybody going to say that if you daven without kavanah, you're not yosei? I don't mean daven without any kavanah, but by definition, if you're having a communication with HaKadosh Baruch Hu on some level, there has to be kavanah there. What is an expression? A tefillah without kavanah is like a guf b'li neshama. It's like, there has to be some kavanah. This whole idea that we blow shofar, that it brings us like we are yifnim, like in the Kodesh Kodashim, to my knowledge, there's only one other time that we say that. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch teaches that when a person daven Shmon Esrei, always they should imagine that they are standing inside of the Kodesh Kodashim. Tefillah brings us to that place, that proximity, that closeness with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The shape of the shofar is sort of modeled after the way a person davens. And perhaps the most obvious point of all, which we sometimes fail to appreciate, the fact that we blow the shofar mamish in the middle of davening, not in shul, which generally we wouldn't do. You know, it's true that, you know, Pesach is called Chag HaMatzos. Can you imagine if when we say Vatitein Lanu Hashem Elokeinu, it's Chag HaMatzos, is it? But everybody's going to take the egg of the matzah and start eating it? Or even the lulav and esrog in shul, which it's true, we bring in the challah, but not the Shmon Esrei, but it would be almost like a hefsek. Shofar is not a hefsek in tefillah because it is a form of tefillah. It is a form of tefillah, which is a very, very powerful, powerful idea. And the Rav again explains that when a person is blowing the shofar or listening to the shofar, it's as if he's expressing himself, but in a way that words won't suffice. So this is sort of the first approach. I know we're 20 minutes in, and I said I have 12. This is the first approach that I'd like to share with you tonight, and we condensed really something that could have easily been an hour, if not longer, into 20 minutes, but a very, very powerful idea. And I would say probably the most important point that I'm gonna make tonight, that perhaps the reason why shofar really does evoke that response, the reason why it triggers us in a way which is hopefully inspirational and hopefully uplifting, even if it brings us tears, and not necessarily in a pure sense tears of joy, because it really is touching us in a very, very deep and profound way, much like tefillah does. And when we hear those words on Rosh Hashanah, we say those words on Rosh Hashanah, that Hashem, Baruch Atah Hashem, Shomea Kol Truas Amo Yisrael Barachamim, that we're really, the sound of the shofar is the true of Klal Yisrael. It is the cry, it is the sound of Klal Yisrael. That's point number one. Point number two, Maseches Rosh Hashanah Daf Lamed Gimel. The Gemara says, as I mentioned, it says in the Torah, Yom Truah Yelachem. Now, what does that mean, Yom Trua? So says the Gemara, Umetagaminan, the translation of the word Trua is Yom Yevava Yehelachon, which means this should be a day of crying. Marsavar Genuche Ganach, Umarsavar Yulula Yalu. So the Gemara tells us there are two opinions as to what type of cry we are talking about. Rashi says Genuche Ganach means Ka'adam Hagoneach Milibo. Says Rashi, groaning is the sound that a person makes when he's sick, when he's in a lot of pain. There's sort of an extended noise, a sound that a person makes because he's in pain. He's moaning and groaning in pain. This is more like a whale. So Rashi is basically describing over here the difference between what we call Shvarim, which is Genuche Ganach, and what we call Trua, which is Yulule Yalu. It's important to just be aware of the fact that from the Torah's perspective, there is only really one sound. It's a Trua, which is preceded by and followed by a Tekiah. We just don't know what the Trua is supposed to sound like. Is it supposed to be a Shvarim Trua? Is it supposed to be just a Shvarim? Or is it supposed to be what we call a Trua? And so therefore, what we do is we do all three of them. We're just basically trying to get it right. Now, it's not just something that we do here in Teaneck, New Jersey. Again, this is part of the ancient custom of Klai Yisrael, that we do different forms of the Tekiyas, because you see, even in the Gemara says that some sort of suffix as to what exactly a true is really supposed to sound like, because after all, there are different types of cries. We don't always cry the same way. But I want you to just look at that for one moment, and just take it in, because I'm going to share with you something very powerful. We're going to hear basically, again and again on the day of Rosh Hashanah, three different types of sets. There's what we call the tashrat, which is tekiyah shvarim to a tekiyah. Then there's the tashat, tekiyah shvarim tekiyah. And then there's the tarat, tekiyah to a tekiyah. And whenever you hear a line, you have to hear the line from beginning to end. So in theory, if there would be a mistake, let's say on the shvarim and truah, certain mistakes, you'd have to go back to the beginning of the line because it comes as a set. So that's an important sort of piece of halachic knowledge. But I want to share with you a beautiful, beautiful idea that I hope you'll find as inspiring as I did, which comes from the Sefer Shalah HaKadosh. He writes like this. In the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, it says, V'hinei asa Elokim asa Adam yashor. That, well, this is a pasuk, that God made man yashor. So what does that mean? Rakish Adam makalkel zatzmo, v'hu ikesh ufsaltol. Alzeh mora tekiya rishona shehu kol pashat v'yashor. He says that there's an idea that God created man straight, so to speak, meaning without sin, perfect, innocent. And what we do is, over the course of our lives, because of decisions we make, we sometimes mess up. But the idea of the Tekiyah Rishona is like, there's a picture over here of a baby, obviously innocent, pure of any sin. The Tekiyah Rishona is life before sin. That state of pure innocence, of purity, of just like when everything was, like they say in Israel, yashar, yashar. Tekiyah, uninterrupted, perfectly straight sound. V'achar kach shvarim. And then there is the shvarim. Shehu genuchi ganach, romez achol yanefesh. V'achar kach yolil romez achatoim gedolim. Shvarim is like small sins. Yolil yolil is like the big sins. Azatzarach adam liyos genuchi ganach v'yolil b'chia rabba pagimayim yodueinu. The idea of the Shvarim Trua is we come to this place where we recognize, oh, what have I done? I'm living a life of sin. I've made so many mistakes over the course of my life. I've taken that tekiyah, which is yashar, and I've broken it. I've broken it. It's been shattered into pieces. And the cry sort of represents that tremendous downfall, the downfall of man. And then he says, Kishadam osa tshuva shlema, when a person does tshuva, when a person does tshuva, so what he's able to do is he's able to restore that original state of purity. And this is why the pasuk in Hosea says, "Ki yisharim darchei Hashem, yisharim lashon rabim, klo mashtei pa'amim yashar." The haynu she'asel so yashar, u'kishachata v'shav machzir li'os yashar. It's a beautiful idea. That we are created in a state of yashrus, meaning we are, again, sort of, you could say, perfect, or as close to perfect as one could ever be, before we even have the capacity, the will, the ability to sin. And then over the course of our life, we mess up, some of us more than others, but we all do. And then we come to the Yom HaDin, and we have the ability, the capacity to go ahead and to roll the clock back, or going through a process of tshuva, which restores us to our original state of yashus. What a powerful, powerful idea. And again, there's only so much that you can hold in your head at one time when you're standing in shul and listening to the sounds of the shofar. And I'm not sure that it's possible or even advisable to take everything that I'm going to share with you tonight and to try to sort of pack it in. But these are some very, I find these to be some very, very profound ideas that can hopefully not just ground us, but actually give us the ability to soar a little bit. When we hear the sound of the shofar and we hear the tekiah and the shvarim and the teru and tekiah again and again and again, that's a very embedded in that, says the shofar, is a very powerful message. The ability to restore ourselves to our original state of yashus. Now what I would like to do with the second half of the shiur, and I guess the timing is working well, is share with you something that is quoted by the Sefer Abu Jaham, and that is that there are, as in the name is Rav Sadia Gaon, 10 reasons as to why we blow the shofar in Rosh Hashanah. 10 reasons. Now, just before we even begin this, just to make a point which is probably obvious to all, and actually over here, I can literally cite chapter and verse. Because generally when we speak about Tamei HaMitzvos, so we say be very careful because we don't really know what the reasons for mitzvahs are. When it comes to shofar, the Rambam actually says, Ki HaShofar Gzeres HaKasavu. Nevertheless, the Rambam suggests sort of a reason as to why the Torah says to blow the shofar. But we have to remember, first and foremost, that we do mitzvahs because God tells us to. And I once heard a beautiful idea in the name of Rav Sham Shofar Hirsch. The word tam, which is a word that we use to describe the reason for mitzvah, is also, what else does that word mean? Tam? Taste. When you think about it, we eat in order to survive. We eat for nourishment, primarily. That being said, we tend to prefer to eat foods that taste good. The taste makes the process more enjoyable. However, if there was nothing available that you liked, there were no tasty foods around, you would still eat because you need to eat food to survive. Such a beautiful concept. When we speak about Tamei HaMitzvos, we're looking for flavor. We're looking for taste. But this is not the ikar. The ikar is the fact that mitzvos are the source of our spiritual nourishment. We need them to survive, and so therefore, even if you don't like the taste, or even if there is no taste, there still is the food, there still is the mitzvah. It's a nice idea, and especially now that I can't think of ever give a shiur like this, we're going to say, okay, here's a mitzvah, and here's 10 reasons why we do it. But the Abu Jam says, Tamim l'kei ha-shofar Rosh Hashanah kasav Rav Sadia Gaon, v'ashetziva abori yizbarach l'tkoa ha-shofar Rosh Hashanah yesh bo zeh asara inyanim. There are 10 different ideas, 10 different reasons as to why we blow the shofar. So I'm going to try to present all 10 of them in the next less than 30 minutes. The first one says Rav Sadia Gaon, and this is a quote. This is as quoted by the Abu Jaham. Mipnei shehayom techilas habriya shebo bara kadosh baruch hu olam umalach alav. Rosh Hashanah is the day which is essentially the anniversary of the creation of man. Ein melech v'lo am. Since man was created on Rosh Hashanah, by definition, that is the day that God became king, so to speak. Now, which is true, Kadosh Baruch Hu was always there, right? B'terem kol yetzir nevra, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we say, Adonai Olam was always there, even before we were there, and on a certain level, he was a melech, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have to be careful how we say this, but sort of like was promoted as a melech on the day that there was man, because, you know, ein melech v'lo am. So, and then he says, V'chein osim hamalachim b'tchilas machusam, shetogim lefneim b'chashrosu b'pranos, lodiya lashmiya mikom b'chomakam t'chilas machusam. It is customary, we find this in the world, that when a king is coronated, so there's a big to-do, which includes the blowing of trumpets, and sounds, and horns, a big festive moment, and this is done in order to inform the entire nation, the entire country, whatever it is, there's a new king. V'chein anu mamlichim aleinu asabari yizbaruch miyamazeh. We are mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We coronate God, so to speak, as the king on the day of Rosh Hashanah. V'kacham edamit v'tehillim v'chatzosas v'chol shofar hariyu l'fnei hamelech Hashem. That the sound of the shofar, says Rav Sadia Gaon, the first reason, is a way of coronating the king. Now this is different than what we said beforehand. I don't believe that any of this needs to be seen as mutually exclusive. All of these, you know, can, like I said, help give us a very sophisticated and a time of much variety over here. But this is a different concept. Now, he makes a very interesting point. And that is that we find this in the world as well. Now, the Gemara in Brachos Daf Nun Ches teaches, Machusa da Ara Ke'en Machusa da Rekia, that if you really want to be able to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus in Shemayim, so the way we do that is we look down here at monarchy on earth. We look at sort of the way royalty conducts itself, and from there we can imagine, obviously on not on a complete level, what it may mean a little bit at Ke'en, as the Gemara says, Ke'en Malchus da Rekia, which is a strange idea. Had the Gemara not said that, I would have said, whoa, you can't say that. But the Gemara actually tells stories about how when kings would come, the Amoraim would go out of the way just because they wanted to get like a little glimpse of what does it mean a king? Not because they cared about this particular king, but we after all, we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we say, Baruch Hu, Baruch Hu, Hashem Elokeinu, Melech Olam. What does it mean, Melech? So, I hope all these pictures are okay. I look carefully and make sure that there was nothing that would be offensive in them, I hope. But these are pictures of coronation, of kings in ancient times. And of course, very often, these ceremonies include the sounding and the blowing of shofars, of shofros. Now, the Sefer HaLishur, Avoba points out something which is very, very interesting, and that he says that, you know, in our generation, this was probably written about 40 or 50 years ago, but it's just as applicable today, in fact, even more so. He said, we don't really find so much in the world today anymore, as many kings as there used to be. There used to be a lot of kings. It used to be that virtually everybody on earth was living under the dominion of some king, sometimes a cruel, ruthless dictator, somebody who was ruling with cruel tyranny. And while that's terrible, and nobody would ever want to live in such a situation, that gives a person a little bit of an idea of what it means that there's a melech. Not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God forbid, is a cruel dictator, but the idea that my life is in his hands. And when we say on Rosh Hashanah, mi yechyo, mi yamus, those words touch people in different ways, but you have to sort of relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being, you know, b'yado avkid ruchi, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, literally, he controls my fate. So the Alishur points out that it's a challenge today, because most of us today are living in democracies in which the government is constantly changing and elected by the people, and the king or the president, whatever the case may be, is subject to the law of the land. It's good timing, and you know, it's just not the same. So it's hard for us to relate. And he talks about why this may be, and that we find ourselves in a new time in history. I don't have time to really discuss that at length. However, Rav Chaim Friedlander, the Sefer Sif Sechaim, so as recorded over here, makes a very, very important point, and that is that he says that at the very, very beginning of Shulchan Aruch, literally, you know, chapter 1, verse 1, so to speak, in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah's first opening comments in all of Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim, he begins with the Pasuk, Shevisi Hashem L'Negdi Tamid, that Pasuk in Tehillim says that we should always place God before us, who klal gadol b'Torah malos ha-tzadikim. This is such an important rule and an overarching goal and concept in Jewish life. In Yeshivas Adam v'tnuasa v'asaka v'hu levada b'veso, k'shivas v'tnuasa v'asaka v'hu levnei melech gadol. You can't compare the way a person acts when he's home alone in his house to the way he acts when he's in front of a great king. V'lo dibur v'arachavas piv k'ritzono v'hu manchei beso krovov k'dibur v'moshev melech. The way a person speaks just idly with friends and neighbors and members of his family is very different than when I am speaking before or with the king. Kol shekein k'shiyasam adam alibo sh'amelech hagadol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashem Moloch al Eretz Kevodo Omer Lov V'Ro V'Masov Miyagagiei Lov Hayira V'Achna B'Pachad Hashem Yisbarach U'Boshem M'Menu Tami. This is what the Ramah says in the very beginning of Shulchan Aruch. A very interesting way to begin Shulchan Aruch, where the Ramah is sort of setting the table, so to speak, and saying, listen, we're going to talk about halachos. We're going to talk about the rules of what it means to be a good Jew. And we know that sometimes, you know, we don't always like following the rules. Eh, who cares? Who cares? Nobody's looking, nobody's watching. Doesn't really matter. So he says, don't forget, our mindset needs to be at all times that we are before the Melech Malchei Melachim. I don't have to tell you, much easier said than done. But on the day of Rosh Hashanah, at the very least, is a day in which we need to sort of get in that zone and to try to imagine. And one more source before we go on to the next reason. This comes from the Sefer Chukei Chaim. It's a beautiful collection of drushos, but sort of written into like one big story, sort of a sefer by Vera Wine. It's a beautiful, beautiful sefer, which has many thoughts on this entire month of Tishrei. He writes something very interesting over here, and that is that he said, and he was actually reflecting on his own experiences in organizational work, working at the OU. He says, sometimes we make big decisions in life, and we're weighing the pros and cons. What should we do? What do you think? What do you think? And he says, sometimes we forget to say, Un was zot Gott? What does God want? What does God want? So, the concept of Malchus is one, as Vavolba points out, that's really hard to relate to. In today's day and age, it's really hard for us to imagine. The closest we can get is by watching something on TV, which gives us like a little sense. In real life, we don't live under the rule of a dictator, of a king. We have, you know, there's a government and rules, but the rules for the most part make sense, and we all have civil rights, and it's very, very hard to relate to it. But we have to try. And the way we do so is not by reaching too far. You remember like a couple weeks ago, we spoke about importance of saying Kriya Shema on a level that's sort of appropriate and realistic for where I am right now. Same thing over here. The way we are Mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our life is just by reminding ourselves with the small stuff. He's here. He's here. What I'm doing now matters. And sometimes, very, very, in the small, seemingly insignificant moments, when I really, really, really want to say a word of Lashon Hara, and I bite my tongue, not accidentally, but I hold myself back. So that's a powerful demonstration of sort of submitting myself before Melech Malchei Melachim, if that's part of my conscious thought. And even when we're saying a bracha, we're not talking about a brachos right now, but I said before, we have at least 100 opportunities every day. Baruch Adonai Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam. Actually, I take that back. Because not every bracha that we say is B'Shem of Malchus. Right? So that's, I'm not sure how many times we say the words Elokeinu Melech Olam in any given day, but many, many. And that's a great opportunity to just think about that, what that meant, what that mean. Okay, number two in the reasons of Rav Saadia Gaon. Ki Yom Rosh Hashanah Hu Rishon La'Aseres Yemei Teshuva. Rosh Hashanah, of course, is the first of the Aseres Yemei Teshuva. V'toka bo shofar la'hachriz aleinu k'mishe mazi v'omer kol harotzo l'shuv yashuv. It's a way of making an announcement. Okay, anybody wants to do tshuva, now's the time. Now, this already, we've discussed this, because was it last week, I think, we spoke about the whole idea of why we say slichos early in the morning or late at night. We're already doing that, so for those of us who are a little tired, it's understandable. And we spoke about this idea of malach ha'nirdam. By the way, I have to tell you, I was speaking to somebody this past week, and I told him, like, just in a nutshell, just what we spoke about last week. And he reminded me, I forgot this, but he reminded me that the Sfaradim begin Slichos with the words, Ben Adam, Malach HaNirdam. So if you were here last week, and you remember what we spoke about, you'll appreciate that. Because, you know, we were sort of formulating this idea, this theory, that maybe the reason why we wake up so early and go to sleep so late, whatever it is, it's so inconvenient, because we're trying to say, how could you sleep? And they actually start to Slichos. We don't do that. B'nai Ashkenaz don't have that Nusach. But they actually begin the slichos with the words. The first words are Malach HaNirdam. How could you sleep? So it fit very well. V'cheinosin, he says, Hamalachim shemashirin es olam techila begzeroseihem v'chol over achar azhara in shon lo tainu. So basically, they send out warnings if they want to change the law. And if a person ignores the warning, so he has no excuse. After all, we warned you beforehand. So this is a humbling thought. It says Rav Saadia Gaon, the idea of the shofar is, It's a reminder that today is the day to do tshuva. And as we said last week, it's like the alarm clock. And over here, I've just placed the words of the Rambam. I'm not going to read it again inside, but the Rambam in Hilchos Teshuvah, Perek Gimel, where the Rambam says very clearly that the mitzvah shofar is about waking us up, that we should sort of get our priorities in straight and stop wasting our time with such shtuyot, as the Rambam says, no, come on, it's a time to go ahead and to reflect and introspect and think about how we can become better people. Okay, number three. We're up to number three already. Lahaz kireinu maimin har Sinai. Shenemar bo, b'kol shofar chazak ma'od. V'nekabalo atzmenu ma shekiblu avaseinu al atzmen nasev enishma. What an interesting idea. After all, no obvious connection between Rosh Hashanah and maimin har Sinai. If anything, what is the day that we recall maimin har Sinai? Primarily on Shavuos, not necessarily on Rosh Hashanah. But he says that an idea of the shofar is, it brings us back to our Sinai. Now, the truth of the matter is, we didn't really need Rav Saadia Gaon to tell us this, because all you need to do is open up the Machzor, and you know that the third bracha in the middle section of Shemoneh Esrei, the Amidah of the Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, begins with the words, Atonik Leisa Banan Kvadechala Al Amkochefla Daverimam, you revealed yourself in the holy cloud on Harsinai to speak to the people. Misha Minashemayim Mishmamtam Kolecha, etc. Kola Olam Kulo Kamu Panach, the entire world was shaking before you and trembling before you as you revealed yourself on Harsinai to teach Torah, Batishmiyam is Kolecha, Vidibas Kochech, etc. And then what do we say? Because of Rakim Aleim Niglesa, Uvakol Shofar Aleim Hofata. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself, and that moment of divine revelation to the entire Jewish people through the sound of the shofar. Why? Probably need another hour for that. We have to try to pull this all together and figure out what exactly does it mean that the shofar is brought into our scene. What is the connection? But if Sadegon says, listen, the bottom line is, when you hear the shofar, at the very least, you should be reminding yourself, you should be remembering about Maimon Har Sinai. And if we remember the Maimon Har Sinai, remember, wait a second, there was a bris, there was a covenant, we made a deal with HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai, that we were going to be good people, that we were going to be faithful, that we were going to keep His laws, Nasa V'Nishma. So the idea of the shofar being reminiscent of Har Sinai is not just, oh yeah, that's an interesting historical event that also had a shofar. It's not a gzeira shofar, shofar, shofar. No, no, no. On a much deeper level, though not a profoundly deep level, but it's supposed to ground us in that historical moment of Maimon Har Sinai, bringing us back not just to the beginning of our time as a people, when we were created and essentially forged as a nation, but bringing us back to our senses. And wait a second, HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself. He told us explicitly what his will is for us and how we are to live our lives. Number four, Laz Kireinu Divrei Hanaviyim Shenimshlu B'Tkia Shofar. When we hear the sound of the shofar, it reminds us of the words of the prophets, which are compared to the Tkiyah Shofar. As it says in the 33rd chapter of the Navi Yechezkel, Mishoma hashomea as kol ha-shofar v'lo nizhar, v'tavol cher v'tikecheyu dama b'rosho yiyeh, v'u nizhar es nafsho malet. So the Navi is basically telling us that if a person hears the sound of the shofar and ignores it, he's basically acting recklessly, and as it were, taking his life into his own hands. And he's saying this in the context of pleading with the people, don't ignore me. I'm carrying the message of God. And if you ignore that message, so you're going to lose. It'll be hurtful to you. And so the Sadegon says, when we hear the sound of the shofar, it also, in addition to everything we've said so far, it also reminds us of the words in the Nevi'im. And even though he doesn't make this point, it's interesting because throughout the entire davening, particularly on the day of Rosh Hashanah and the Musaf, for sure, there are many references to the words of the Nevi'im. Number five, Laz Kireinu Churban Beis Hamikdash, V'Kol Truas Mochamas O'Ovim. K'mo Shenemar, as it says in Yirmiyah, Ki Kol Shofar Shemati Truas Mochama, K'sherashom Kol Shofar Nevakesh Mes Hashem Al Banecha Abinyan Beis Hamikdash. Wow, that's really interesting. You know, I just said that Sadegon says that the shofar brings us to Maimon Har Sinai, which reminds us of Shavuos. Now it says the shofar also brings us to the moment of Churban Beis Hamikdash, what we're going back to Tisha B'Av. All of this within the day of Rosh Hashanah, within the day of Rosh Hashanah, and the idea is that by remembering Churban Beis Hamikdash, which is, he says, alluded to again, because the psukim allude to the sound of the shofar at the time of Melchama, specifically the time of the Churban Beis Hamikdash, this will bring us to be Mevakesh Mes Hashem, Abinyan Beis Hamikdash. Of course, you know this, but there is a lot in our tefillos on the day of Rosh Hashanah in which we daven for Yemos HaMashiach. There are many parts in the davening in which we focus on that, you know, focus our attention to that, you know, that hope, that dream, that aspiration, hoping to realize it soon in our days. That is an important part of davening. So Rav Sadegon is saying over here, It's not as big of a chiddush as it may sound on the surface. The chiddush is the shofar, that the shofar reminds us of Churban Beis Hamikdash, and that inspires us to daven for Binyan Beis Hamikdash. But the idea of davening for Binyan Beis Hamikdash, you know, v'yasu kulam aguda achas, you know, there are, you know, simcha liyatzecha, v'sasam liyrecha, right? We ask v'simcha to Hashem levadecha, right? So many parts of the davening on Rosh Hashanah is all about, you know, that we should see the coming of Mashiach. Number six, Laz Kirei Akedas Yitzchak Shemasa Nafshu L'Shemayim V'chein Anachem Nimsa Nafshenu L'Kedush HaShemo V'yal Zichroneinu L'Fanov L'Tova. The sixth message of the sound of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah is to remind us of Akedas Yitzchak, specifically the fact that Yitzchak and Avram, both of them in different levels, were Mosi Nefesh. They were prepared to make the ultimate sacrifice, different types of sacrifice, but for both of them, the ultimate sacrifice. We should also be prepared to go ahead and sacrifice for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now we know, again, this is not a new idea, because again, in the Tfilos, including in the Davening and the Musaf, and certainly throughout Slichos, we are constantly bringing up again and again and again throughout the entire period of Aseres Meitshuva, the event of Akedas Yitzchak. Of Kook, in the source over here, actually tries to zero in a little more closely on that and says, what is it about the shofar that connects it to Akedas Yitzchak? So you can say, well, because instead of Yitzchak being brought as Akedas, so the ayah was there and the ram and the horn, okay, but on a deeper level, what is going on over here? So he says something very, very profound, and that is that what we are trying to tap into when it comes to the Akedas Yitzchak is the potential for greatness. He says, when you think about it, it's called the Akedas Yitzchak. It's not called the Hakravas Yitzchak or the Shechitas Yitzchak, because Yitzchak was never actually killed. There was a potential there for Mesiras Nefesh, but it never actually came to it. And yet, that was such a profound moment. It was such a transformative moment. So much came from that. Says Rav Kook, when we stand on the day of Rosh Hashanah, we hear the sound of the shofar, we realize that we have tremendous potential. There's tremendous potential. Even if I haven't realized it at the moment, even if I haven't been able to actually accomplish all that I'd like to, that potential is so profound, and the potential itself can be transformative. So Rav Kook suggests that the connection, if I understand this correctly, the connection between shofar and akedah is about this idea, sheyesh lanu b'koach, afapisha inu b'shlemes b'po, that we have this potential, and the potential already is very powerful. And finally, the Aristavash of Yonah said, Aishus over here, also sort of highlighting the special connection between Akedas Yitzchak and the shofar, makes somewhat a different point, and that is that the idea that the shofar is reminiscent of the Akedah, obviously that's for us. It's for us, it goes without saying, but sometimes if you read it too superficially, we say, oh yeah, we're going to blow the shofar, and that will remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Akedas Yitzchak. So he says, obviously, God doesn't forget. In fact, we say in the davening, in Shichacha Lefneich Yisech Vadecha, it's Yom HaZikaron, for God's sake. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not forget anything, he didn't forget the Akedas. True. But it's about reminding us not only about this event in history, but once again about the capacity that we have to achieve greatness. Number 7, Laz Kireinu Kibbutz Nidche Yisrael, to remind us of Kibbutz Galios, Ule His Avos Elov, and to yearn for this, Shenemer Bo B'Yishayi V'Hoya V'Yamahu, Yitokav HaShofar Gadol V'O Oftim Be'eretz Ashur. And of course, that's a pasuk that we mention in our, as part of the Musaf. Beautiful idea. What do we say every day in our davening, 3 times a day? Tika b'shofar gadol chiruseinu v'sanes l'kabez goliyoseinu. There is, it's right before our eyes all the time. There is this powerful connection between shofar and kibbutz golios. And look at the words of Rav Sadia Gaon, ulis avos elav. And look at this next slide of just pictures. Of course we should yearn for it. Of course we should desire it. We should imagine. But we don't have to like close our eyes and imagine, because it's literally been happening before our eyes for decades now and continues to happen. In fact, Baruch Hashem, just today, one more family from our Beis Akenesis made Aliyah, Mamish, just today. And the shofar on Rosh Hashanah is reminiscent and should inspire us on every level to, you know, relate and to dream and to yearn and to daven for the completion of Kibbutz Galios. We're almost done. Look at that, number 8. The shofar is what? To frighten us, to scare us, to make us shake and quake, to feel afraid. Now, there's not enough time at the moment to talk about the concept of Yir Shemayim. The whole idea of Yir Shemayim and Yir in general is something that it's a little hard for us to relate to. Today, in the world in which we live, we find that children in particular do not respond positively to an approach which highlights Yira. Now you'll say, well, they shouldn't respond positively, but what I mean is the outcome
is not known to be very effective. That the approach that we take in chinuch today tends to be a lot more ava oriented, and that's not just because it feels better, it's because it just seems to be the approach that works today. And when I say today, I don't just mean, you know, here over the last few years, but already for many, many decades, maybe even centuries, you know, great rabbinic scholars, and particularly those who are focused on the chinuch, have noticed these trends, and literally almost like this change in the teva of people. But we can't completely abandon the idea of the importance of developing Yerushalayim, and we have to try to connect to it in a way that is meaningful for us. I actually just had a conversation today with an individual who just had tremendous anxiety leading up to Rosh Hashanah because of what a powerful day it is and what that means and how much is on the line. And on the one hand, that was very inspiring. Really, really inspiring. On the other hand, I think she was, if I could even say something, was almost like a little too anxious. So, we you know, Yira has to be balanced with Ava. And it's not my place to say whether, you know, you can't measure these things in any absolute sense, but we have to, you know, we have to find a way in which we can be motivated by a sense of Yira Shemayim, in which it can keep us in check and help us stay focused when we need to, but at the same time not paralyze us and not make us feel that we, you know, that we're no good, or we're worthless, or anything we do is not going to help anyway, etc. But what Rasadi describes over here is pretty intense, that the shofar is basically supposed to scare us, supposed to frighten us. I mean, that's the word that he used, right? Shumari to machri is very different in a sense than what the Rav was describing in terms of the shofar and the sounds of the shofar and what it's supposed to listen. Number 9. Lazkir yomadir agadol yirim menu shnemer b'tzfanya karov Hashem gadol karov maher ma'od yom shofar v'tzura. So again, perhaps this is the most obvious of all, and I don't know, by the way, how we came up with this order. I was actually thinking of changing the order, but I didn't think that was right, so I'm just sticking with it. But it's a funny order. But he basically says, yeah, the shofar reminds us of din. Not just that it reminds us of Rosh Hashanah, of course, you know, reminds us of din because the Navi says that in the day of din, you hear the sound of the shofar. And finally, number 10. Number 10 is Lazkirenu Tchias HaMesim. It reminds us and it calls our attention to the great day of Tchias HaMesim Ulahaminba, and to believe in that day. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says in Shayo, Kol Yoshvei Tevo V'Shochnei Oretz Kinsonei Sarim Tiru U'Chizko HaShofar Tishmu, that the day of Tchias HaMesim, as described by the Navi, is a day which will also be heralded in with and through the sound of the shofar. So we have, according to Sadi Gaon, 10 different ideas, 10 different thoughts in addition to the thoughts that we start off with tonight, which can help us focus and attach ourselves to this very, very profound mitzvah. The mitzvah of shofar is 9 kolos. And the way we do that, we have to have at least 30, and then 30 becomes 60, and then we make it 100. So the way it works out, it's very nice. If you like the mitzvah shofar, you have 100 kolos on the day of Rosh Hashanah, and here, of course, we have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, so you have 200 kolos. On the one hand, you know, it's a limited number of kolos and limited amount of time, but there's what to sink ourselves into there. And I hope that our discussion tonight and giving us different opportunities to sort of focus on the mitzvah from different angles will enhance the mitzvah, will enable us to appreciate the mitzvah in a more elevated and more meaningful and a more deep way. And Be'ezras Hashem, we should all be inspired by the sound of the shofar. It should enable us to achieve all of these great lofty ideas that we discussed tonight. It should inspire us towards greater tshuva. And we should all be zochah to Ksiva Chasima Tova. I want to wish each and every one of you Shnas Baruch B'Shalom, a year of health and happiness, fulfillment for you and your families. Next week at this time, we won't meet, obviously, that'll be Rosh Hashanah, but we are scheduled to meet 2 weeks from last night. 2 weeks from tonight is Erev Yom Kippur. Wow. So we're not meeting on Erev Yom Kippur night, but we'll be meeting on Monday night for one more, for sort of the final in this series. That obviously won't be a Rosh Hashanah topic, it'll be on Yom Kippur. That'll be 2 weeks from yesterday. So thank you very much, and hope to see you then.